Welcome to the Family Finance Show with Diana Granu, proudly brought to you by Old Mutual. This podcast is your weekly guide to effective budgeting, planning, and future-proofing of your family's finances. Because money matters to every family, and every family matters at Old Mutual. Enjoy the show.
My name is Diana, and this is the Family Finance Show, the podcast to help you manage your family's finances better. Every week, we share an episode on topics relating to increasing your family's income and managing expenses, controlling your debt, and investing for the future. Welcome to the Family Finance Show, and thanks so much for listening. Today, my guest is Andrew Levy, who's the co-founder of Umuzi and the African Coding Network. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks for inviting me. Wow, it's always cool to be on the other side of the podcast microphone. I used to run a show back in the day called Frankly Speaking, and I had to think about asking all the hard questions and not receiving them. So I'm a little intimidated, I won't lie, Diana, but hopefully you'll be nice to me.
I'll try. My side is definitely easier, asking the questions, not answering them. So, Andrew, today we're talking about further education for your children. In one of our earlier episodes, one of the earliest ones we did, actually, I spoke to financial advisor Warren Ingram about the best ways to save for a university education for your children. But in that episode, he challenged the conventional wisdom that everyone should assume that their children will go to university. So for this episode, I want to focus on alternatives to university that may appeal to our listeners and their children, because first of all, not everyone gets a university exemption, not everyone can afford university, and also not everyone wants to go to university. So I love Umuzi's stated objective of being a learnership program that supports talented young people to access high-value careers. I think a high-value career is what every parent and young person wants. But before we get into what Umuzi does specifically, Andrew, do you think that if your child got into a good university and you could afford the cost of university, should they always choose university over another option? What are your thoughts?
Diana, you're putting me on the spot immediately on your first question. That's unfair. Okay, so and I'll tell you why. So I do have children, and my partner and I, we had a major discussion, dare I say a fallout, on whether our child should go to university or not. And obviously it wasn't our decision at the end of the day, it was hers. And she decided to go to university. And I definitely think that there is a lot more nuance in that question than there used to be. I mean, back in my day when and I'm not that old, but you know, it wasn't even a question. The aspiration was to go to university. It was to get into a first tier university, so that you could study something, so that you could then follow a career. And you know, the stars kind of were all aligned for you from the beginning. And I really think that that has changed dramatically. You know, if we look at, I don't want to give too much historical background to bore your listeners, but if we look at, you know, the background of traditional education and where it came from, it really was to fuel the industrial hyper age. And that was basically teaching people how to do repeatable tasks. And so what better way to do that than to actually build a system that allows for repeatable tasks to be taught? And that's what our traditional education effectively came out of. That's obviously morphed and changed slightly. But I think the premise still exists, is that we've got this very old-aged way of thinking about education, and we haven't updated that for what the future requires. And I think if you think about the system as it is, it's changed dramatically. A lot of repeatable tasks are now done by AI robots, and more learning, you know, these robots are doing more and more learning of these tasks as well. So it's less now about doing repeatable tasks and more about thinking about how to build things, how to finish and complete things. And I think the scary part as a parent and maybe as a child as well is that I think the journey of what a career looks like has dramatically changed. in my day, they used to talk about how Gen Zs and millennials, they'll have at least 6 email addresses of the different businesses that they work for. And now, you know, email addresses, I mean, who uses email anymore? It's like, this is the future of it. And I think that's often very, very difficult for a parent to try and guide a child at this age and in this time, forget COVID, but just generally, as to, you know, how to support your child to make a good choice. And for the young person themselves, I mean, keep in mind, young people are exposed to social media for the most part, if they have access to data. And they're seeing, you know, 16-something-year-olds become multi-millionaires with, you know, millions of followers on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram. And there's so much pressure to be like them, to have succeeded, to know where you're going at age 18, that it's very, very difficult and often overwhelming to think about what a path looks like for the future. So, I mean, these are just some initial thoughts. I think that the answer is very much more nuanced than just yes or no. I used to be a vehement no character. Don't go to university. It's a waste of time. You're going to spend you're going to spend 400,000 Rand alone just on fees. And if you were, you know, if you're a mom or dad coming from a private school background, you thought that those private school fees were ending, and actually they're just beginning or continuing. And that's without, you know, accommodation if you're going to move your child to a different province. So there's a very real financial issue around that, which I think, you know, is where Muzi has been, you know, is why Muzi exists effectively from the beginning, Diana. We really saw a big niche in the market, which is to say there was a massive market failure. There was a lot of people that were really, really exceptionally talented that might have even started university, or a tertiary education of some sort, and then had to drop out because of financial burdens. It doesn't equal that, you know, it doesn't mean that they are not intellectually talented or that they don't have what it takes to get a good job. They just literally haven't got the access because the financial barrier is too high. And so I think that's where we've played for a large part of our life, is, you know, trying to change that market failure. So that's on the supply side. A lot of young people are falling out of the system because of financial issues. On the demand side, it's even worse because there are all these new careers. You know, you've heard of data engineering and data science and web development and mobile devs and UX strategists and designers. And none of these jobs are being fulfilled by the current education demand or output. So there's a massive market failure, and that's where we think that there's huge opportunity for alternative education. I think it's very important to say at this point, Diana, you know, like, one of the big things is if your child says, I don't want to go to university, it's really important to remember that education does not equal intellect. And I really want to underline that, because I think there's a lot of people at the moment who are like, no, you still have to go to university in order to make a success of yourself. And I really think that we need to open up that conversation a little bit more, open up our thinking a little bit more, to say that a piece of paper doesn't firstly guarantee you success in career and doesn't open doors that you think it does. Now, is there an argument still to be made for university? Absolutely. And I think that there's two arguments for me. The first is to say the physical university is a really cool place where, you know, really radical young people can test out their mettle a little bit, find their identities, share identities, have arguments, have discussions with different people from different backgrounds, and learn, you know, a different way of thinking. It becomes a really safe space in order to find yourself. And I think for me, that's really, really undervalued. And I don't think universities think of themselves like that at all, and they probably should. Because I think young people desperately need a place post-home that they can find a safe landing ground to test out what they believe their independence is and their identity. And I think the second reason why I think this conversation is a bit more nuanced is traditional education or university, I think, is super important from an academic perspective. Academia is important. The study of thought is really, really important. However, the way in which we've built our education systems where research is linked with lecturing, for example, I think is broken. It wastes academics' time and it wastes good people's money if you're in the system. Wow, I've spoken a lot and I haven't even, and that's the first question. I apologize, just very excited about this. So please let me know any other questions you have. I'm here all day.
Yeah, I agree with everything you've been saying there, Andrew. Some really good points that you raised. I was having a discussion with a friend of mine the other day. She's 45 and she said that one of her biggest regrets was that she didn't do a university degree. She just did a 3-year diploma. So it took the same amount of time and she had a university exemption. So she could have had a degree. But what she's finding now is that her career prospects are limited because she earns quite a high salary and then most jobs are asking for a degree as a minimum requirement. So for now, it's quite a real limitation. But as you pointed out so well, is that the world is changing. So what was important back then is not necessarily what's important now. Like, careers never existed when I was at university, like podcasting. I never thought I'd be a podcaster, and yet this is a career that exists today. So, and I definitely don't need a degree to do this job or to run my business. But on the other hand, you make some really good points about university. As you say, it's a way for children to, or for young adults actually, to test their ideas, to bring them into contact with a whole lot of different people. And my network from university is actually one of the most valuable things I got out of my university education. So yeah, it's a really tough question to answer. It's not really a simple yes or no. As you said, it's really nuanced. In fact, my father, he has a PhD in ichthyology, which is fish, quite a strange field of study to choose. But he did an advanced degree, and yet when I was 18 and trying to figure out whether I wanted to go to university, he said, no, it's really not worth it to go to university, rather get a job and work your way up. So everyone has a different view, and I think it's always good to look at your specific situation before trying to make this decision. It's definitely not a simple decision to make, and it's one that you should make with your child. It's actually a decision that they probably have to make. But let's say, for example, that you and your child think that a practical learnership is the best way to further their education. How can Umuzi help, and what do you do?
So Umuzi is quite specific. We're trying to, as I said earlier, we're trying to plug that gap of young people that are talented that potentially don't have access to a traditional roadmap of, you know, learn to job kind of programmatic style. What I mean by that is, you know, in English terms, means going to university. So Umuzi supports talented unemployed young people aged between, I would say, 18 and 30 to access high value digital jobs. So we started out actually in creativity, and that was a long time ago, almost 10 years ago now. And we really realized that one of the big challenges of traditional education that we were falling into in terms of the trap was that we were actually just using and utilizing the skills that we had in order to teach what we thought was relevant because we had those skills. And what we realized very quickly on, you know, in our journey is that actually we need to be a bit more demand-led. We need to see what's out there, what people are saying in terms of the demand, and then we need to match the demand. And this is the problem with traditional education. You know, for good reasons, I suppose, they've got a whole bunch of red tape that you have to walk through and get through in order to make a qualification and build a degree out. And it's very difficult to change that degree. Because of, you know, in South Africa, for example, you've got the CHE, which is a higher education body that you have to continue to submit your degrees to. And it means that you really can't be moving at the speed at which the job market is changing. And that's a really, really important thing. Because in this world right now, the job market has changed so fundamentally and is continuously changing. It's ridiculous. So we support young people in fields that you might have heard of before, but web development, front end and back end, mobile specializations, iOS, Android, and hybrid, data engineering, data science. So data engineering is really cool. It's like taking all this data from all these different points in your life, and what they call it, so, you know, like what I love from the tech world is they've got such cool terminology for things. So they call it data wrangling, and it's the wrangling of data. You can just imagine this rope being lassoed around some data point, and you can just see nerds are making these things up, but like it's really cool. And so they wrangle data, and basically what they're doing, data engineers, is they're extracting, transforming, and loading the data into a format that can be utilized by an employer to actually make good data-backed decisions. And then you have your data scientists. These are the guys that and girls that are effectively analyzing that data. They're going, okay, so we've got all this data about Diana and her family and what they do on a daily basis. How can we add more value to her world? So that's really cool. And then we've got people that then strategize around that. So that's typically what you call your UX strategist or your business analysts. So we support a stream in that as well. And they're really taking the problem from the user's perspective and trying to enable solutions that are data backed. And then you've got your creatives. And creatives are really, really important because they're still the storytellers. It's still, you know, all this cool technology and data and apps that you use, they're still basically a person at the end of them. And if you do not communicate to the person at the end of the game, then you're not going to win. So we've got a whole bunch of creatives as well who are thinking about how to communicate the story that effectively the data has shown us. So that's kind of the streams. And our big metric at Amuzi is we want to support young people to get into high value jobs and then retain those jobs. Diana, you made such an interesting observation about your friend the other day who said she would have really preferred a degree. And I think if we break down what she's actually saying there is that she's unfortunately had to go into the job market in a very traditional way and submit her CV. And what we know about the job market as it was is that 70 to 80% of people get their jobs through word of mouth or referrals. So networks become super important. And if we just, you know, zoom out a little bit, one of the biggest challenges South Africa faces and why I'm so passionate about the work that we do at Amuzi is because right now, the legacy of this country means that there is a very small haves and a very big have-nots. And the divide between the haves and the have-nots continues to get bigger. So it doesn't matter what one says. If you're in the privileged community, which is very small in South Africa, you 9 times out of 10 will know someone who can get you that job, who can refer you to that person, who can support you in getting the laptop that you need in order to upskill on. This is effectively what we call social capital. And what Amuzi is passionate about is not only upskilling young people, not only getting them their first job, but continuing the journey of their career with them so as to build a new generation of social capital from people that potentially didn't have it before, and then to exponentially grow that. So in South Africa, because of apartheid, we know that only 10 million people were effectively looked after in apartheid. That was the white community. Democracy has happened. And, you know, if I'm honest with you, I think that community of people that are being serviced is just slightly bigger. We know we've got a population of 60 million, but I think that the middle class is sitting only slightly more than 10 million originally anyway. So there's a big divide between the people that have the social capital and the people that don't. And I think one of our big goals and responsibilities as young, excited South Africans needs to be to change that dynamic so that more people have access to better opportunities and then can continue to exponentially grow the country. I've said a lot there. I hope that all makes sense. Just, I suppose, to say one more thing, we've been going at this for a little while, and we're very, very proud of the fact that over 600 young people have gone through our programs at the moment. And to this day, we track absolutely everyone, and over 83% of those young people are in high-value jobs and continue to retain those jobs, even in this COVID period. So we're very proud of that fact.
Yeah, that's an incredible, incredible achievement. Well done to you and the difference that you made in those young people's lives to have a job where they're valued. It's just great for self-esteem and obviously for family finances. You know, if you're earning an income, that relieves the burden of so many people. So well done. Brilliant achievement there. Andrew, and what I love about what you guys do as well, which I think is lacking at universities and potentially other places, is that you offer a practical internship. So that first work experience is so critical, because once you've learned the theory, you have to put it into practice. How do you help your graduates, if you call them that, get their first internship?
So we are an NGO, and effectively the way that we're structured, not to go too far into it, but we're structured in a way that big blue chip corporates actually invest in us, and they invest in the young people on the programs. And so the way we've structured our program is very much an on the job kind of approach. So when they come to Amuzi, they're learning on the job, they're learning in product teams and product squads, they are building real things. And then part of the program is a 3-month work experience opportunity at the corporate that invested with them. And we find that a really valuable on-ramp into getting these young people into jobs, because it allows the corporates and the managers to really look at these young people and say, are they a technical fit? Are they a professional fit? And are they, you know, a values fit? And I think that's been one of the secret sources of success at Amuzi, is that we have that opportunity to get these corporates to really test out the market. You know, that's the problem with traditional education. It's so far removed from the actual workplace. It's actually scary. And, you know, education outfits, they love to like talk this game up. You know, we're a proud education university. You just look at like the Ivy League schools in America, and they're all about badges and esteem and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it's all absolute rubbish. Effectively, what they're building and saying is that we can give you a network that's very powerful, and then you're on your own. And I think this is one of the big things. You know, like I love speaking about this with people, because they have very different views to mine. But like, you know, throughout your entire university career, you are tested on standardized tests. And like, Diana, when was the last time that you were actually required to do a test in your work environment? I mean, for me, that's, you know, that's years ago. Like, I never was required to do a test. And so why do we do standardized testing then? It's absolutely mind-boggling to me that this continues. Instead of actually saying, right, this is what the workplace looks like, this is how it will feel, and this is kind of the things that you will do in that workplace, and let's get you that feeling as quickly as possible. So to your point that your dad made, and the study of fish sounds absolutely fascinating, but he's right in a way, because it's like, if you're so far removed from what the world of work looks like, then you can spend 4 years there, but then effectively you're 4 years behind. And the problem with those 4 years is there's an expectation built. You know, I remember it when in my own life, you know, I came out of varsity and I was lucky enough to go to UCT, and I had the ego of a UCT alum where I thought I was just going to walk into any job possible, and I was unemployed for 6 months. And part of that, the reason I was unemployed wasn't because, oh, you know, like I'm a white male in a you know, young democracy in South Africa and only people of color are being looked at. No, that's absolutely rubbish. That's a terrible narrative that people and middle-class families talk to themselves up about. It's rubbish. The reason that I was unemployed for 6 months was because I had an ego the size of the continent and thought that there were only specific jobs that actually were good enough for me. And therefore I was unemployed because I wouldn't take any job, you know? And I think that's really the thing that is important to see here, is that we're setting up our kids for failure, sending them to these you know, prestigious tertiary education institutions, whether they're locally or even abroad, because these institutions aren't preparing people for the world of work. And, you know, I think this is a really important thing. So, you know, like a lot of people will disagree with me on this, Diana, and, you know, are very traditional, and that's okay. You know, like we must recognize that this is what I'm talking about isn't for everyone. Some people really do better in structure, which I think is cool. But there are really good alternatives to traditional education that are structured. And I think that's important to say as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you were talking, it reminded me also of how I was also unemployed for some time after my degree, and I was living in different places around the world and just working in minimum wage jobs. So I suppose not unemployed, but working in a minimum wage job, looking for a job that I thought would further my career, which I eventually did find. But there's nothing like unemployment to help you focus your mind. And I think that's when you just do what it takes. And so it also reminded me of when I was starting my business, my travel business. I had to build a website, and I didn't know how to build a website, and I didn't have money to pay someone to build a website. So I did a course on Udemy, just 100 rand. I did a course on WordPress and created this website myself, which was really empowering. And actually, I'm so glad I did it, because now with any changes I need, I can just make them myself. So there's a huge power in online education. What do you think of online education versus something in person like Umuzi?
So Umuzi is actually, you know, because of COVID, they call it the COVID pivot. We've actually pivoted completely to online learning now as well, which has been a really interesting journey, full of learnings, full of opportunities and positivities, but also full of some negatives as well. I think we mustn't, and there will be a lot of people that will say, will scream, and be evangelical almost about online learning. I think that online learning is helpful and is positive, but one needs to be careful, and this I will say to you, is be careful of the traditional education traps. If you're doing online learning and it feels very similar to traditional education, then basically all you're doing is you're making your own classroom, but it's the exact same. Okay, so if you're watching a YouTube screen or anything else where there's a sage on the stage and you're just listening for 2.5 hours and doing nothing practical about it, forget about it. Like, that's education. That's not learning. And there's a big, big difference. Education is very much around this capitalistic way of thinking of, let's get as many people into a classroom, let's have one person who's got all the knowledge, and let's fill up your cups to the empty vessels. Learning is a continuous commitment to saying, I'm curious about something and I want to try it out and I want to learn about it. So I think when thinking about online learning, my suggestion would be try and find something that is very practical in nature. And a lot of these online learning things will have some kind of demos or models that you can try. And then I would say also the big thing here, for me at least, and what I'm seeing, is to make things modular, to really break down things so that you get the small wins. And I think that's super, super important. And a lot of workplaces now use this thing called Agile and an Agile practice. And Agile really is breaking down tasks into smaller, more bite-sized chunks that teams can work on and get small wins, get their confidence up, and start building out the bigger things. So just like you said about your journey as an entrepreneur, the first thing you had to do was build a website. And the fact that you built that website by yourself on WordPress means that now you've got confidence in that you're going on the right path, and you're like, well, what's the next thing I can do? Because now I've got the confidence to go with it. You know, so, and I think parents need to be totally aware of that in their parenting style as well. Just to bring it back to, a good theme of your podcast, it's like parenting styles also need to change. And I think that there's a learning in this modular way of thinking, where it's not like I'm the sage on the stage, I'm the dad, or I'm the mom, or I'm the guardian, therefore I have so much power over the child. Children are learning more from TikTok than they are from you in a single day, you know? And I think that it's about guiding our children into making good choices about potentially what their future could be like, and to break down that future. So it's not about what do you want to do in 10 years or 5 years even. It's about what do you want to learn? What are you curious about? And what excites you? And let's go on a journey of that.
So Andrew, do you have any resources that you can share with our listeners if they want to find out more?
So Diana, this podcast came at a perfect time because I was introduced by a colleague of mine to an incredible website called the globallearninglandscape.org. Globallearninglandscape.org, no weird spellings, thank goodness. I'll send that to you as well, and I'm sure you can put it onto your webpage. It basically maps out the world of learning. They use big words like it's an open source taxonomy for the future of education, mapping the learning and talent innovation landscape. And all that basically means is it's showing you all the different options for the future worlds of work and how you can get involved in them and who's in that space. So if you're looking for an internship, you can click on the internship button and it'll show you the top internship places, online internship places. If you're looking for learning how to build apps, for example, it'll show you the coolest online options for learning how to build apps and do app development. So it really gives you a good sense of what the world looks like in this online space. From a South African perspective, you know, I think there are a number of options out there in terms of alternative learning. And I think it really depends on where you are, where your head's at, and what you want to do. You know, one of the things, Diana, that we also have to acknowledge is that not everyone is going to be a coder. Not everyone is going to be a data scientist, and not everyone's going to be, you know, a UX designer. And, you know, these new terms are like the old terms of doctor, lawyer, and accountant back in the day. And I think the good news is that there is so many more different opportunities, more niche opportunities. You know, you mentioned podcasting, that are actually now careers. And I think that it's important to get guidance from actually your child, for them to say, hey, I'm interested in the following things. And for you to then guide them to say, right, let's do a research project on this. You find out some research stuff. Let me find out some research stuff. And let's work together on this, and let's see what happens. And I think the main thing is not to wait for the end of the end of school to start having these conversations. Doesn't matter what age your child is at. There's so many good free online learning opportunities and online resources that I think it would be remiss to start straight afterwards or only when you're in matric. Let your child guide you as to what they're interested in, and then see what you can come up with on building that journey together, making it modular so it feels like you're actually achieving things, and then seeing where you go from there. I think the important thing here to say is that if you are very traditional in your thinking, there is a middle ground, and that middle ground is to send your child to university. But I would say that then what I would be very, very considered about is what will they do at university. I really don't think a business degree is going to help you. I think if you're in professional services and you love numbers and you've always wanted to be an accountant, go do accounting. That's absolutely fine. There are some online learning references for accountants even, but you know, if you're dead set on being an accountant, there's nothing wrong with that. We shouldn't shame that kind of journey. But I think if you're confused and you still feel like you're a bit of a traditional parent, or you're a child who feels like they still want to have that university experience, please do yourself a favor and just go do a humanities degree. Anything in the humanities or liberal arts is an absolute win, because it'll expand the way you think. There's a great resource called After School, and school is spelled weirdly. It's S-K-O-O-L, and it's just amazing talks that are graphically represented by incredible thinkers, and it just opens your mind up. And I think that's what that's the gift you can give your child at this stage, is to open their minds up to a whole bunch of different things. If you are privileged enough to have a good internet connection, then the least you can do is support your child to see all the different things that are around them, and not to just be like, go and speak to this person because they are a cinematographer or a director or a web developer, but actually just to expand their thought processes. Because I think the future of work is changing so quickly that it's really hard to see what that'll look like in even 5 years. But what one can say is that there are a number of attributes that we have to build in our young people currently, which is this idea of driving towards their own results. It's about being curious. It's about being passionate. It's about having grit. It's about having determination. All those things that they used to call soft skills in the past, back in the day, are becoming the most important things. The hard skills are actually the easiest things, because they can be learnt on the job. The soft skills are the things that we have to encompass and try to encourage in our children. And if any children are listening to this, then well done, young person, for listening to this. But if you are listening, then, you know, actively going about doing projects that you're curious about is a wonderful, wonderful thing to do if you're young. You know, in this time where we've had COVID and it's been a disaster from a social perspective, just like getting curious about things around you or even things online. You know, like parents, you know, and I'm included in this, often are quick to criticize social media and all the negative things, but we're never safe enough to encourage the positive things that we can learn and promote from social media. And I think curiosity, drive, passion, determination, grit, these are all wonderful things to work on with your child. And that can be learned. Nothing is impossible to learn.
So, well, Andrew, this has been such a fascinating discussion. I really love your ideas, and your non-traditional thinking has a lot of personal appeal for me. So I've got so much value out of this conversation. But before I let you go, I have one last question that I ask all of my podcast guests, and that is, what is the one piece of financial advice that you would like to pass on to your kids?
Diana, that's a great question. I think that we, as a society and as a world, have been so absolutely consumed with the idea of money as a store of value of wealth. And, you know, as hippie as this sounds, and it really does sound hippie-ish, I think that we should be more humane in our activities in the world, be more, you know, kind and considered as to how we accumulate wealth and then how we spend it. And I think that we should worry ourselves more around a collection of incredible memories and curiosities. So, you know, for me, as weird as that sounds, you know, like, I'm sure people listening to this are going to be like, what, you want just like shells and then hold them in a store of value in a windowsill in the van or caravan or something. I mean, if that's where life takes them, then yes, I do. I would prefer for people to worry less about trying to accumulate wealth and store it and hold it, and worry more about being more humane in society, trying to solve the inequality that we see in our world, and not only on a South African context, but on a continental, on a world context, and to try stop worrying about seeing your value as part of how much money you have in your bank account. You know, we often think of really rich people in the world, and in the US, and there's, you know, I'm sure your listeners have listened to thousands of podcasts by really, you know, Rich Roll and all these weird people that interview the best and brightest entrepreneurs who made $1 billion and did, you know, investments and IPOs and made themselves, you know, billionaires. And really, is that what we think valuable is? And I really think that what I'd love to pass on to my kids is the definition of value is not inherent in how much money you have in your bank account. And I'm not saying that just because I have no money in my bank account, but more importantly, because I think that it's really important to renegotiate the rules that society thinks are important to us. And I know this sounds crazy and I know it sounds hippie-ish, so forgive me for that. But I really think that if we take a look at what the world looks like and the mess that we find ourselves in from a societal, from a political perspective, then we really need to reassess why we've got there and what our role in that is. And I think part of that is, you know, trying to uphold values that potentially need to be rethought and passed on in a different way to our children. So, yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a non-typical view in the world of personal finance, because in the world of personal finance, people are always thinking about how to manage their money better. And I think it is important to manage your money better, but I think that this perspective is what people need to hear. Most definitely, your value doesn't depend on your bank balance. And if more people understood that, I think the world would definitely be a happier place. But Andrew, thank you so much for all your insights and all your everything that you've brought to the show today. I really appreciate your time today on the podcast, and all the best with Umuzi and getting young people into high value careers. We need more of that in South Africa. So best of luck.
Diana, thank you so much for having me. Just to say, if you want more information on Umuzi, you can go to www.umuzi.org, U-M-U-Z-I.org. And if you want to check out any crazy hippie thoughts that I've been having, I'm pretty active on social media. So at Yebo_Levy, L-E-V-Y. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram. And I'd love to engage with your listeners. So if they think that I'm completely out in the world, please let me know. I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. And I think having better most and how to converse in those conversations is really important as well. So I look forward. I've been speaking so much and you've given me such a great platform to do that. But I also look forward to listening and hearing some of your listeners' views on some of the thoughts that we've been speaking about. So thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Andrew. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast to stay on the journey to improving your family's financial well-being.
Thank you for listening to the Family Finance Show with Diana Granu, proudly brought to you by Old Mutual. The time is now to own your financial future. Visit oldmutual.co.za for more great advice, articles, free budgeting tools, and calculators, or to find a financial advisor. We'll be back next week.